Have you walked the Camino de Santiago? If you can answer yes to that question, I would love to hear from you and interview you for the podcast so together we can help our fellow pilgrims have the time of their lives on the way to Santiago. So please get in touch via our Facebook page, which is Camino de Santiago Pilgrims Podcast, or our Instagram page, which is pilgrims_podcast, and we can set up a time to get that interview done. And as a thank you for getting in touch, I will send you an e-copy of my international best-selling memoir, which is called The Only Way is West. One of the most recent 5-star reviews is from Michael Rowley on Amazon, and he says, "What a wonderful story from start to finish. Laughter and tears in equal measure. I recommend this book for pilgrims everywhere." Martin T. writes on the 23rd of April, 2021, "I really enjoyed the honesty of Brad's Camino. He really brought his experiences to life through his writing style. I would definitely recommend this book to anyone looking to do the Camino." So if you have walked the Camino and you'd like a book, like they said, which is, I think Martin T's title was Best Read on the Camino. Well, I think that's a bold statement. I wouldn't go see it's the best read, but I think it could be a good one. As a thank you, I'll send you a copy of that. So please get in touch. And with no further ado, it is time to get into this week's episode. Here we go. It's the searchers. So, as a little bit of bonus content this week, I'm posting an interview that I did with the lovely Lee Brennan from the Camino Cafe, which is a YouTube channel and a podcast. So please make sure you check out after listening to this interview, or before it, or during, or whenever suits you, really, the Camino Cafe. Lee Brennan has got interviews with authors, with Camino guides, and her enthusiasm is so infectious. Her enthusiasm for the Camino shines through in all her interviews. Lee lives and breathes the Camino, so much so that as I'm speaking here today on Sunday, the 24th of October, 2021, Lee is actually walking the Camino Francés. So Lee, if you hear this while you're on the Camino Francés, we want to wish you buen camino. And meantime, to all the listeners of the Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast, should I say, please enjoy this interview that I had with the Camino Cafe back in July 2020. So we'll be back next week, as I promised, on our Facebook page, Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast, with a brand new interview every 2 weeks. So that's every 2 weeks I'll be posting a new interview with a different pilgrim. But meantime, you can listen to this interview with yours truly. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to the Camino Cafe. We're very excited today to have Bradley Chermside with us to talk about all of his Camino adventures. And if you're familiar with Brad, you know that he has written a great book called The Only Way is West, a once-in-a-lifetime 500-mile adventure walking Spain's Camino de Santiago. And he wrote that. It was, I think, put out on around 2019. And then Brad, I first became aware of Brad through his podcast, and he has a fantastic podcast. I think he's at his 51st interview or so. And
your good self?
Yeah, quite a milestone. And Brad was kind enough to invite me to be interviewed and share my Camino story. So I really appreciate that. We did that a couple of weeks ago and it just came out this week. So great timing that we get to talk to Brad today.
Yeah.
So anyway, welcome to everyone to the call today. And I'll be opening up for questions if you want to ask Brad some things. I think anytime that you've been on the Camino numerous times, as well as doing a podcast and writing a book, that he has a wealth of experience that he can share with us. So welcome, Brad. Thank you for agreeing to be at the Camino Cafe today. So
thanks for asking me.
Oh, you're welcome. So Brad, if you could just tell us a little bit about, to start off the call, maybe three of the things that you're currently working on. I know you've been very busy and always have lots of side projects going on. So I thought everybody might be curious to hear what you're currently working on.
Okay, well, currently working on trying to keep my dog quiet because you probably just heard her bark. So, Burley, shush. Okay, Three things I'm working on. Wow, big question. Well, I was working on, firstly, a kind of sequel to the book, The Only Way is North, which is the Portuguese Camino. That kind of got sidetracked when COVID-19 kicked in. And I decided to write instead a kind of the chronicles of our life in quarantine in Spain, which has been a roller coaster, to say the very least. So that's going to be out of Christmas, actually. That's like, you know, book wise, that's what I'm working on.
Okay.
In terms of the Camino podcast, I just enjoy it. I really, really enjoy it. For me, it's the podcast is a hobby and a fun hobby, and to get to talk to lovely, amazing pilgrims like you guys, it's such a gift and an honor, and always washes up those memories of my Caminos and reignites that Camino energy and awakens that Camino consciousness that always seems to be such a higher vibration than everyday experience gives us. So always just literally looking for new guests for the podcast, and a little bit of me wants to make it more, I guess, polished and professional. I guess I will do that when I've got the third thing I'm working on right now, which is moving back to the UK from Spain. This is going to be our second move in 4 months due to COVID.
Wow.
So yeah, it's been, like I said, it's been a roller coaster. No complaints. But just, you know, these challenges come to test you and to make you grow. And we've certainly been tested, my wife and I. But I was due to go on the Camino del Norte next month. And we had our start date. We had our flights booked from London to Bilbao because we were going to fly back to London. And then we heard we'd have a 2-week quarantine in the UK. And then there'd be we'd have to wait. Everything with spanners thrown in the works. I started getting some kind of funny twinges in my knee, and went for an MRI and told I've got torn cartilage and torn meniscus and all kinds of things. But a Camino del Norte, which is one of the most extreme in terms of altitude and ups and downs and undulating terrain, it would just be a bad idea to do it right now. So we currently have rebooked our honeymoon to go, because that was going to be our honeymoon, which we had to put off again because of coronavirus. Anyway, you know, consider ourselves some of the lucky ones that we're still healthy and all our loved ones are still with us. You know, that's the good thing. But working on staying alive, pretty much. That is the thing at the moment. So, yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, sorry to hear about your knee. I hope that heals quickly. And
it's already healing, to be honest with you. Thanks for asking. Just if anyone wants to know, like, I played so much soccer in my football day. I played soccer till I could play no more, till I was hurting every single day and decided to give up. I've been running marathons and triathlons and obviously Caminos and everything. And I'm the kind of person that if I'm having a good time, I just don't worry. I won't react to anything until I've got pain. And I knew my knees were not quite right quite a while ago, probably 5 or 10 years ago, when a physio told me I had tracking problems with a patella. This probably is very boring, but please, anybody, if you're told you've got some knee issues, do something about it. Don't wait until you get pain like I did. It really knocks your confidence, believe me. But anyway, Camino's on ice for now, but will we go back to do... We are planning to do it as soon as I've done some work with a guy in the USA. Is called the Knee Pain Guru. Look him up. He's revolutionary. No operations. If the surgeon would have had their way, I would have been under the knife and in bed recovering. But I've been doing some very strange exercises that I never thought I'd see myself doing. And it's relieved the pain. And I'm back walking 10K on flat terrain again. And better. So
that's
look him up, anybody. The knee pain guru, look him up. Bill Panavaro, what a legend. What a man. I love you, Bill, wherever you are.
We'll put a little plug out there for him. Excellent. All right. So I think, like many of us, including you, we've all had a Camino put on hold. And so that's the great thing about being able to listen to your podcast. And what I've really enjoyed about doing the Camino Cafe calls is I think it's kind of keeping that Camino spirit alive. So we really appreciate all the work that you're doing with your podcast. I've read your book, and you and I've talked a little bit, but could you share with everyone how you first became familiar with the Camino and what actually made you decide to take your first Camino pilgrimage?
Oh, what a story. I wrote a book about it. I'll try and cut a long story short. I'd read a couple of books about it. I'd read Shirley MacLaine's book. My brother, who's a very deep and spiritual person, and I am too, but I kind of transmit and process and channel my spiritual energies in a different way to my brother. My brother's the kind of person that's going to sit in a room and digest a book and read it and talk about it. I'm the kind of person that'll read it and then just go out and find for myself. So I read Shirley MacLaine's book. I read Paulo Coelho's book about the Camino, which delved very much into the spiritual side of it. So the seeds were kind of planted there. And then I bumped into a friend of mine on the London Underground on the wrong train, miraculously, just mad coincidence. And I hadn't seen him in 3 years. And I got on the wrong train in London. He came running off the train after me. I didn't even know he was on that train, and said, "I've been looking for you. I wanted to get in contact with you and to tell you about this thing I did, this walk I did, the Camino." He told me all about it. And I was going through some pretty existential dilemmas I was having in my life, as we all are at different periods. And it seemed like the perfect place to go and iron out all those creases in my thinking. So, and the thought of just going to a new place where I'd see new faces in every single corner, and adventures where I'd meet people from all over the world, it was just too good to resist. So I put my business on hold. I closed down my business, which was financial suicide, but I just felt like I had to do it, really. And sometimes you just got to do what you got to do. And my heart always rules my head. If my head would have had its way, it would have been, no, you need to keep going with your business. I don't regret anything. It was the best decision I ever made. And I love it. I'm still addicted to the Camino and always will be.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I think probably just about everybody on the call feels that strong connection to the Camino. And once you go, you just want to be back, right?
Of course.
What do you think about it makes you want to go back for you?
I could go on again forever. So I'll try to, the nature, the being outside for 8 hours a day. I'm the kind of person that will turn my phone off when I'm on the Camino. And I love that mental space and clarity and the extension of your cognitive bandwidth just from doing that. I love the union of mind with movement and body with mind. A simple thing is, when you're at home, you've got something to eat and maybe you've got the TV on, maybe you've got your phone next to you, notifications going off. But when you're on the Camino, you sit down and you eat a simple sandwich, the bocadillo or whatever you've got, and you are present in every single bite of that sandwich and every single chew of that sandwich and every single swallow of that sandwich. And it sounds silly, but there's so much power and peace that you get from simple acts, and the deprivation of, you know, something as simple as a cold water just turns into a five-star fantasy on the Camino. And for me, it's just going back to basics. And I think probably living on the Camino is probably how we are programmed to live. We restore our factory settings. It's like what I've said on the podcast many times, if your computer stops working or your phone's freezing, sometimes you have to restore factory settings. You have a reboot and it works like new again. And that's what the Camino does for me personally. I go back to factory settings and I'm working like new again. Mm. And I interviewed a guy on the Camino, on the podcast, and his interview is going out next week. And what a guy, what an inspirational guy. and she's 65, walked across America, walked around America. Bob, I cannot wait to put Bob's interview out there as well. Bob just said, there's something going on there, man, something going on. And he couldn't really define it, you know, but he's right. There is something going on. Is it the ley lines, this explosion of spiritual energy, you know, and these minds of emotional minds that explode inside you as well? Is it the 8 hours a day exercise? You know, you exercise for 30 minutes and you get such a buzz from it. You times that by 8 hours, and it's incredible. You know, it's just that feeling you get. There's nothing better feeling when you sit down at the end of 8 hours of hiking and you've got your Camino family around you, and you're sipping on a cold beer, una caña, or you're on a vino tinto, red wine. There's just nothing better than that feeling. You know, just satisfaction comes out of such small things on the Camino. And I call it the Camino University. It's a great, great education for life and living and life skills, to sharpen those life skills.
Yeah, totally agree. I first became aware really of the ley lines through Shirley MacLaine's book. And I think there's definitely something to the energy that you feel as you're walking through the Camino, and everything that you're saying about that, you know, the walking the 8 hours. And Father Kevin Codd talks about in his book is, you know, these miracles are happening all the time around us, but we're moving so fast in our everyday life that we're missing a lot of that. And I think the combination of being on the actual path with the ley lines, there's got to be something to it. I mean, I think we've all felt that energy there. Michelle's asked a couple of questions in the chat. Michelle, do you want to unmute yourself and ask a couple of your questions to Brad?
Yeah, sure, Brad. How did you transition back to the real world? I ask that because I know it was extremely surreal for myself and some of the gals that I end up meeting on the Camino and communicating afterwards. How did you do it personally?
In a very bad way. That's the truth. I found it after my first Camino, I found it very, very difficult. And I was kind of depressed. No, I was depressed. There's no doubt about it. I loved the Camino life, and I didn't like my life before the Camino. So I kind of made the mistake of trying to live like a pilgrim in civilian life. And I ended up closing my business down because my business was a pressure in my life and an unwelcome pressure. And I remember reading something that the definition of happiness is removing negatives from your life. And so I thought, right, I'm going to remove all of these negatives. And this was a negative. So mine was very abrupt, my transition to the changes I made. So I would say to anybody, take your time before you make those transitions. Excuse me. And if you can have a few days a week or so before you go back to work or before you go back to everyday life, just to, I think Lee and I talked about it in Lee's podcast interview, actually, like set your intentions and do it slowly. Because also a friend of mine once said to me, don't make long-term decisions based on short-term emotions. And I think that's what I did. I closed my business down. I moved house. I thought I wanted to be like I was living in Alberg. So started living in friends' spare rooms. I was running 10 miles with milk and gallons of water in my backpack just to feel like I was on the Camino again. It was a little bit silly to do that. So how about yourself, Michelle? I mean, how did you make that transition?
Well, I learned about the Camino because of living in the UK, which was delightful. I did a lot of business in Spain. So I was, some Americans did not know, most Americans didn't know it. And this was pre-Martin Sheen's movie and so on. And so when I went, I'm a software consultant. I helped start a software company in the UK for Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And so when I was in the US and as I was working and independent, I was between projects. And I literally left for the Camino in 3 days. Just decided, hey, I'm in between, something I wanted to do. I did see the way. It reminded me and I just went. So I had no job to come back to. I had no project, which was actually one of probably the most biggest blessings of the world. I didn't really start working. I walked the Camino in October to November, showed up on the eve of my birthday, and came home, and it was holiday season, right? So for America, we have Thanksgiving, we have the holiday season. So I really didn't have to get back into work until January. And I do call that a blessing. It was still surreal to even be in a car. You know, it's things like that where you're going faster than so many miles per hour. Yeah. And, you know, it was surreal in that way. You're trying to explain it to family and friends and they don't get it. They don't, but they see that you're different, but they just don't understand it. So it was a little separation from family and friends, I think. As you experience, you know, and I did have a little bit of depression, but I was able to kind of take that moment and ease into my life, which I was very grateful for.
Definitely the best way, for sure. Yeah, I've learned that. Yeah.
Bradley, you said near the end of your book about how you had changed. And one of the quotes that I think this is a good time to kind of bring up, and Michelle, we'll go back to your next question, is Brad, you said, wanting to become the next Bono was the mission of the person that went. But not the person that returned. Can you tell us a little bit about who Brad was before he took that first Camino and what the change was that he no longer wanted to be Bono?
Well, you know, music is everything in my life, and it always has been. And I've always played in bands, I've always written music, I've always created, and It was my, just it still is my passion. It until COVID kicked in, it was still my full-time job as a full-time musician. The person that came off the Camino wasn't the person that went on the Camino. And I know is because the life that supported that ambition I had outgrown. So it didn't make any sense to continue pursuing something that the saying is, as we all say on the Camino, it's not about the destination, it's the journey. So I wasn't enjoying the journey that would take me towards that ambition, even though if you ask me if there's anything I could do today, that would still be my number one thing. But you have to be a realist. You know, they say you shoot for the stars, you might land on the moon. So I took the transition of kind of writing my own music and hoping to make a living like that to actually just singing other people's songs and still enjoying, actually, probably more. Yes, I do enjoy more the fact that I get paid to sing other people's songs. And that's been my full-time job until COVID kicked in. So, and I enjoy that journey more than I did driving around to gigs in London and, you know, traffic and sound checking, waiting 4 or 5 hours to go on stage, singing to one man and his dog. And, you know, it's just, you know, so much, the juice just wasn't worth the squeeze anymore. I had to make a change and I did, and I've never looked back. And what has become a spin-off of that is, actually, I love to create and I love to write, so why not write books? And I've actually found that I enjoy writing books as much as I do writing music. So, and that's an actual possible long-term project for me, to become a full-time author. Yeah, that is my long-term Santiago now. But that's a long road. That takes a long time, because unless you write something, you know, you get lucky and hit it with your first or second, this is something you've got to keep chipping away at over time. Much like a Camino, you just keep chipping away at those kilometers day in, day out, and it hurts some. It's not always pretty on the way to get there, and some days are better than others, but you get there in the end. And I think that's exactly what I learned from my Camino as well, is that when you have a clearly defined goal and you know exactly where that is, as long as you're enjoying the journey to get there, then it's okay to go for it. But you need to, for me personally, put those goals clear and make that objective. And once you do that and set that intention, like we said, when you finish your Camino, you set your intention to make that transition smoothly. So mine, the post Camino of Rabs is completely different. And I had to sever some friendships as well. And it was tough. It was like it was a social divorce from my bandmates and from people, and it hurt a lot. That was part of the pain of giving up. But you shed a skin and you grow a new one.
Yeah, I really felt for you in the book when you talked about the divorce from the band, that had to be really hard. You know, as you and I had talked about, that's what prompted me to do my Camino, so I could really feel the compassion for you that coming back, that you had to make some changes in your relationships. And then you actually made a huge move and moved to Spain, which we'll talk about maybe in a little bit. But I want to get back to Michelle's other question, if you wanted to ask, Michelle.
Sure. But, well, Brad, since you brought up your book, it's one of my passions and desires. Since I was 21 years old, I always said I wanted to write a book. Just didn't know what it was going to be about. I still don't know exactly. I'm not sure if it's going to be a Camino book, but I always love to speak to authors and ask about A, the process, but B, the publishing process. How did that all work with you? So it's kind of logistical, but it's something I would love to know because I do appreciate from others who've done it.
So this is a question specifically about publishing or the process of writing a book and publishing?
Yeah, part one, the process of writing the book, and part two, the publishing.
I would say to anyone that wants to write a book, that just start writing. Just start without judgment. Just get it all, a stream of consciousness, throw it all out there. Dictation really speeds things up. There's some amazing dictation software available now. That often comes with your Mac or your PC or whatever. And just maybe get some dictation software, just speak it all out there, get a first draft out. And then after that, you probably need to start typing away to polish and trim what you've got there into something that you might think would be a first or a pre-edit draft. So that's what I did. And I had emails, I had journals, I had dictaphone commentaries as well. Because I'm not a social media person when I go on Camino. That's the whole point, is I want to go back to being a caveman on the Camino. I want to walk, I want to eat, I want to drink. I don't want to be staring at my phone. That's not judging anyone that is on their phones. I know this is a modern day thing and this is what it's all about, but it's not for me when I do my Camino. My Camino is about disconnecting. In fact, reconnecting, whatever way you want to look at it. So just get drafting with whatever you got, get as much as you can. This is my own advice. And what my mentor, I would also recommend getting a mentor. I was really, really lucky that I knew someone that was an author and had done quite well and sold hundreds of thousands of copies of books and in my genre as well. And so I just kind of got in contact with him and we would have some meetings, we'd have some beers and some chats, and our friendship actually blossomed. So get a mentor, get drafting, and then you're going to get to a point where probably you feel like you can do no more. And that's the point where you would go for what's called a developmental edit, a structural edit. And that's when an editor, so you're going to need a good editor, someone that comes highly recommended. And they're going to say to you, you need to speak more about this. You need to speak less about that. You need more detail in this part. Maybe you switch this bit from the end to the start. Maybe you put this start from the bit to the end. Here's a problem point, a pain point. This could be the basis of your story. And that's what my editor did for me. That was the main job my editor did, was they said there was something they saw at the end of my book, which I thought was insignificant. And they said that to me, actually, this could be the basis of your whole book. Put this at the start, this is your problem point. And that point was basically my love life at the time. It was, you know, a mess. I came back from the Camino, was married pretty soon afterwards. So, and then once you've had your developmental edit, where your editor will say, do more of this, do less of that, move this, move that. You accept that or you reject it, basically. And then you'll polish and draft away until you're probably sick of it and you can't do no more. You never want to see it or talk about it again. And then you give it to your editor again. Your editor will perform what's called a grammatical edit or a line edit. And they will maybe rearrange, you know, commas here, colons here, paragraph changes here. They'll tidy it all up. And then after that, you give it to a proofreader and then you press publish. And you can either self-publish or you can go with a traditional publisher. I wanted to go with a traditional publisher, but my mentor said to me, what's the point with a traditional publisher? They pay very little royalties and you might have to wait 6 months to a year to get a reply. And with publishing yourself on Amazon, or you don't have to only publish on Amazon, there's Kobo, there's Apple Books, iBooks, you know, you can publish, you can go wide or you can just publish on Amazon. It's your choice. But the royalties are 70% on Amazon. And I don't know what they are because I'm just exclusive with that with Amazon at this moment in time. I will go wide eventually, but why wait? I mean, it's an old model. It's an outdated model to publish and wait for someone. And the big advances that you used to get, you know, 50 grand, 60 grand to publish, that they're not available anymore, that the industry has changed. So it depends on what your goals are and what your genre is. But for me, my mentor said to me, and he'd self-published after being published by a traditional publisher, he bought back the rights to his books and he made a lot more money, sold a lot more copies, grew his readership. It was a no-brainer. So personally, self-publishing has worked for me, and why my sole book doesn't pay all of my bills. It brings in a useful monthly income, and I will publish my next book. I will self-publish my next book. But Michelle, by all means, after this, feel free to message me if you've got any questions, and I can definitely point you in the avenues that gave me the help that I needed.
Oh, cheers for that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome.
We'll come back. Let's come back to the book. And maybe, Michelle, if you have any follow-up questions that you want to ask Brad about that, I want to move on to the podcast as well. We'll come back to Michelle. But I know that Corey had some questions that she and I were talking about earlier this morning. So I want to make sure we give Corey a chance here to ask.
I wondered what route you took for your first Camino, and then what others that you've been on.
So I've walked two Caminos, the Camino Frances and the Camino Portugues. Two very, very different routes. The Camino Frances is obviously the most celebrated, most fabled, the most famous Camino Frances. Magical experience. Loved every second of it. So I would say the same about the Camino Portugues. The Camino Portugues grew on me. You know, it starts off tough. Really, really, excuse me, very, very tough. There's a lot of flat, mind-numbing terrain where there's nothing for miles and miles and miles. And you start to think, is this what I came for, really? The Portuguese, without fail, are lovely people. Their English is probably better than mine, to be honest with you, because I'm speaking in kind of a neutral accent here, but my normal accent would be a lot more colloquial, put it that way. But the Portuguese, they speak like the Queen, you know. It's like you listen to them, you're like, how did you get this good in English, and where did you get that clean accent? It's incredible. And they're lovely people. The Portuguese food is very different to the Spanish food. The pastéis de nata, these kind of custard tarts, custard pies. I love the Camino Portuguese. And then when you start to get kind of three quarters of the way to Porto, it starts to become a bit more like the Camino Frances. It's more served, there's more facilities. And then once you get from Porto to Santiago, the last 2.5 weeks, it is eye candy all the way. It's just phenomenal. It's beautiful. You're walking alongside rivers and tributaries and ravines. The sound of running water is always with you. It's very therapeutic. The border crossing is spectacular. You go across this really big river from Valencia to Tui in Spain. You jump 1 hour ahead because the hour time difference. It's very green. It's the Camino Portuguese is a lot flatter. So for someone that's starting out, maybe that's a better one to do with. And for someone that's only got 2 weeks, sometimes not everyone's always got a month. That to start in Porto is a great place. You could do that in 2 weeks, no problem. So, but I think if someone wants the full-on Camino experience and they've got the time to go all out and, you know, they want to experience like the way and the romanticism of the Camino and the explosion of the spiritual energy that supposedly comes from the ley lines, you can't reach out and grab it. You can't taste it. You can't smell it, but you can feel it. It's there. And that's in abundance on the Camino Francés. And the Camino Francés has some pretty big, as one Spanish guy said to me, he said, it's all bing, bong, bing, bong, bing, bong. So yeah, two very different Caminos, but love them both.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for asking.
Kurt and Susan, did you have any questions? Or Kevin, I want to give everybody, Dad, did you have anything that you wanted to ask before I ask another question?
What season did you do the Frances in, Brad?
I've been on the Frances in summer.
Summer?
Mm. Very, very hot, very crowded. Sometimes you couldn't always get a bed in the albergs. But you kind of learn to roll you learn to swerve and roll and dance with whatever the Camino throws at you. And I think that's one of the things, one of the lessons of the Camino as well. And you always find a place to stay in the end. But someone said recently that, you know, the Camino Francés is often the most beautiful in spring or autumn because, obviously there's less people, but in the spring they say that it's had a bit of a break in winter and it's at its most beautiful then.
Well, we've done both spring, kind of off season, and fall, walking through the vineyards full of grapes, and we happen to do the Portuguese in the fall also. So you walk through a lot of vineyards in Portugal also.
Yeah, yeah. Where did you start your Portuguese?
Porto.
Oh, beautiful. Lovely. Isn't Porto an amazing city?
Yes, mm-hmm. Lovely.
Yeah, really nice place.
Kevin, Dad, do you have anything that before I? Okay. All right. So, Brad, you've done 51 interviews, I think, for your podcast so far. What one do you feel was the one that really surprised you on what you learned? And then could you also maybe talk about what you think has been the biggest lesson that you've learned from doing the actual podcast?
So first question, was, has anything surprised me? Right. You know what? I think nothing surprises me with the Camino and Camino Pilgrims because we are, and I say we, because I am part, we are all part of the Camino Pilgrim tribe. And we are often quirky people. It's not a normal thing to just go and walk across Spain 500 miles or up north. It's just not everybody does this. So we're intrepid, brave, often quirky people with really nice stories. We're searchers. I think we like to find answers. We're not afraid to look inside ourselves and come face to face with difficult questions. And I love that about pilgrims, and I love the fact that you meet pilgrims and people who are on that kind of personal journey and evolution as well. Because there's nothing wrong with settling in life, with accepting your lot, with, you know, this is how my life is going to be, and But that's never been my nature, and I don't think it's the nature of pilgrims either. I think we look for answers, and we go walkies to find out. And we know nature has the answer. We know that taking that time out from everyday life, when all the noise is there, where you can't hear the answers. So nothing surprises me. The only thing is that with the interviews I do, they all give me something. They all reawaken that Camino consciousness every single week I carry out an interview. And for different reasons, I come off every call and I say to my wife, I love that. That was so much fun. And that's why I will continue to do it. I don't make any money from it. And I'm not saying that I don't want any praise or applause for that. I don't. I just do it because I think Camino pilgrims and are often the best versions of themselves. And I love talking to people at that version of themselves, at that vibration of themselves. And it helps me as a person to stay in contact with that high energy. And I do believe if the world is full of people at the best versions of themselves, the world will be a better place. So if I can make more people go and have the experience that I had, which was the most amazing experience of my life, I think the world's going to be a better place. So it's my little personal mission to make the world a better place by making the podcast and hopefully making more pilgrims out of people and making people go back to their everyday lives as better versions of themselves.
Well, Brad, I feel like when I first ran across your podcast, that was the very thing I felt from you, is I could hear your deep love for the Camino, but also how much you cared about the pilgrims that you were interviewing and how much you respected their journeys, no matter how different they were. And I feel like every week when I listen to your podcast that you re-inspire me. So that energy that you're getting from the podcast, I'm feeling as well as a pilgrim listening. And it just makes me want to go back. It makes me, want to get on the rooftop and tell everybody to go. I know I can't do that because people have to wait for their own calling, but I think your podcast really serves the purpose that you're out to do. So thank you for that.
No, thank you. And I love, I got a message last night from Brian Horn. I think he's in Ohio somewhere, if I'm not mistaken. And he said, your podcast has inspired me to go and do it in the Portuguese in May next year. And that just makes the hairs on my arm stand on end, It's like, yes, job done, mission accomplished, And I really, that makes me smile more than anything.
Oh, Bradley, you make me smile. You just reminded me that last night, so I'm from Ohio, and I got a message last night from someone that I haven't seen, probably 6-7 years, that lives still in Ohio. And she messaged me last night on Facebook after I had made the post about our interview. And she said, I just wanted you to know that my husband and I had been thinking about going on the Camino, but we kept putting it off. And when I saw your post, I immediately listened to it. My husband and I listened to the interview as we were making dinner. And she's like, you have reignited our interest to go, and we are definitely going now. So that really excited me to hear them say that.
Team effort, good stuff.
So I know that Corey had another question. I want to make sure we get to that. And want to be mindful that we are watching the time for Brad, because he does need to go, unfortunately or fortunately for him, a goodbye party before he heads to UK.
I could probably stretch it out another 10 or 15 minutes after 8. So, but I'm leaving the UK. So I'm leaving Tenerife, going back to the UK because of COVID. And our neighbors have put on a leaving party for us, kind of impromptu. So I'm like, okay, well, I've got like a little thing at 7 o'clock, so I might be a bit late. So, but yeah, okay. We can stretch it out a bit longer, no worries.
All right, before Corey goes with her next question, let's make sure that we let people know how they can find you. So if you just want to talk about your Instagram accounts, your Facebook, all the things, all the ways that they can find Brad.
Well, for the podcast, just go onto Facebook or Instagram, just type in Pilgrims Podcast, and you'll find the yellow arrow, the ubiquitous yellow arrows. And that's our podcast and Facebook and Instagram pages. And I post stuff on there. I'm not big into social media, but I do realize it's necessary. So I do what I have to do. If you're interested in reading the book, it's on Amazon, and just type in The Only Way is West, and you can get it off there. That's it. That's where you find me.
Brad's Instagram is really great too. He highlights, just like Michelle does too, but a lot of different posts from fellow pilgrims. So it's not just just their stuff. They're really sharing the whole community. So I appreciate both of their Instagram accounts. So Corey, did you want to go ahead with one of your questions?
Yeah, so I in your book, chapter 11, The Joy of Bonking, I really loved what you had to say there, and about how day five that you know it was finally your turn to be bonked. One of my favorite questions to ask are the people that we interview is, I know a lot of people hit that wall, and it's hard to kind of continue at that point. When did that happen for you? What did that look like? And what part of you did you tap into to continue on?
Okay, so I think I was full of happy beans, having the time of my life, and I just wanted to keep going and going and going. Not because it was not because I wanted it to finish, but I was just having such a good time every day. And I was only 5 days in, I think it was, in a place called Villatuerta. I just remember sitting on this in this church garden, sitting down, and I'd only been eating kind of sandwiches, you know, the bocadillos. I wasn't caring for myself. I wasn't fueling myself with, like, you know, well, nutritionally. And I just came to a point where I just felt sick, where I couldn't drink any more of the fountain water. I just felt like I had a bit of a fever, really, and had no energy and irritable, which is unlike me. And I think I got to an albergue in a place called Villa Mayor de Monjardín. And you couldn't say that after a few glasses of red wine, but anyway. And I went to bed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I slept. Apart from getting up to have a meal in the albergue, which I managed to force feed myself because I didn't feel like eating, but I did. I was in bed pretty much 12 hours, and then woke up the next day. The hospitalero said I could stay another night, and I was going to stay another night, but I shed a lot of weight from my backpack as well. And took some baby steps. Just did a kind of 10, 12 kilometers the next stage, and just broke myself back into building it up again, because, you know, you do the first day from Saint Jean Pierre de Port de Roncesvalles, that's what, 28 kilometers, 17 of them are like that, and then you're like that, and then the next day is like that, and then it was a rude awakening. So I, as always, like I said, I've learned with my knee, I've learned the lesson the hard way. And I learned the lesson the hard way. And I think that's the only way I learn lessons. I'm full of brawn, but not so much brains at many times. And that's my downfall. I'm becoming more aware of it. I'm just going to plug my computer in. I'm going to disappear off screen for 2 seconds. 2 seconds. Right. But fire away with the next question.
Okay. Corey, did you have a follow-up to that?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Sorry about the chapter title. Sometimes I read what I wrote and I feel very cringed, but anyway.
I loved it.
Well, switch gears from the low point to what would you say was the high point of each of your Caminos, where you just felt like, wow, this embodies the spirit of the Camino. This is exactly why I do it. Just that perfect day for you out on the way.
Oh, so hard, isn't it, to describe one? Right, let's think about the Camino Frances. I had lost contact with some friends of mine because I got ill, because I had some bad blisters as well. I fell behind to some Austrian guys that I met. I hadn't seen them in 2 weeks, and in the middle of the meseta. By the time I'd got over all of my ailments and I was really finding my way in hitting fifth gear, I don't recommend this, but it was in the meseta, and I had done, it was a cloudy day in the meseta in the middle of the summer. This doesn't happen very often. So I thought, ah, this is cloudy, so I can keep going, because the meseta is like a table. You could just keep walking. So I'd been on the road for about 12 hours that day, just because I felt like I could. It was a silly thing to do. Like I said, I'm full of brawn and not much brains. Anyway, I got to Carrion de las Condes, and I saw my two friends that I hadn't seen in 2 weeks. And it was just a magical moment, just to see these two guys. I mean, I only knew them for 3 days, you know, before that, or 5 days it was. And I just saw Stefan and Sasha, my Austrian buddies, and I shouted out this Austrian greeting, and they were like, whoa! And, you know, just one of those reunions that, but arriving in Santiago for me was so special as well. I mean, people say maybe it's not about the destination, the journey. For me, it was about both. My arrival in Santiago on my own was full of tears, cried my eyes out like a baby. And I'd done 58 kilometers to get there that day. So, and it's not about how far I'd walked. It was just the fact that I felt like I could, so I did. And
what emotions arrived between the two times that you arrived?
In Santiago, the emotions in Santiago.
Yeah, so compared from the Frances to the Portuguese, what was different?
Well, I arrived in Santiago with my wife the second time, so I was more excited for her. It was very different because it was winter as well. So there weren't as many pilgrims around. I mean, we must have seen maybe 6 or 7 pilgrims on the Camino Portugués in winter. So quiet. I think one of them was going the other way to Fatima. Okay. I was more excited for Rachel, my wife, because she'd never done anything like this before. But also to remember the feeling that I got that first time I was there, it really washed all those memories up again and just put a massive smile on my face. And it was always like, almost like I was looking back on that person that first arrived there and kind of proud of them in a way. Like, you're back again, but you remember the last time, you remember that? Do you remember how the plaza was full of people and there was street performers going on and bagpipes down the stairs and the train, you know, the tourist train going around the plaza? Both times were magical for different reasons. Both times were magical for different reasons. And also to do it with my wife, you know, it was special to do that together. We love the Camino together, and that Camino Portugues grew on us as well. And so much that, to be honest with you, it was my wife's kind of encouragement to go and do the Camino France, Camino del Norte, which we were going to do next month. But one, we can't because I need to sort my knees out. And two, the COVID situation in Spain is getting worse. So lovely question. And thanks for letting me relive that memory. I mean, there's just, my next goal is to become a full-time author and a parent. But if that wasn't to happen for some reason, I could lay on my deathbed. Strange thing to say. And always think you had that moment and be proud of the person that was brave enough to go and do that, you know, and to close down the business and walk away from what everyone was, you know, society was telling me to do, to keep building your business, can make this much money, and none of it meant anything to me. So there is a happy medium between them, I've learned since, but yeah, and I just want other people to have that experience.
Well, Brad, you got me so choked up on this. Like I just think about what the moment that must have been for you to stand there that second time, because your life had changed so much from the beginning of your Frances to that time you stood there for that first time in the square with your wife. That's just a beautiful story.
Yeah, yeah. And I even kind of, yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I felt sorry for the guy that, the first guy that arrived there, which I took, you know, talking about myself in the third person here, but I worried for him. If I was to meet him now, I would worry for him, you know, and, because I knew what was, I know what was he was about to experience and how hard it was that first 18 months when I remember laying on my floor, just in my house, head down on the floor, just crying my eyes out, maybe 6 months, 7 months after my first Camino, I'm thinking, what is going on with my life? You know, just, should I have even done this stupid bloody thing? You know, it's ruined my life. That was what I was thinking, you know, but it was the best thing I ever did. Now I can say that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think one of the quotes that you often hear on the Camino is that it doesn't end in Santiago, it starts. And I think your story has is a brilliant, it shows us how our whole life is a journey, right? And you had to go through that first leg of the Frances and that first arrival in Santiago, but that wasn't the end. Your journey has so much more. And it's gonna be so exciting to really watch your life as it continues to progress.
I'm sure you've got better things to do, but yeah.
No, I think it's gonna be brilliant. I know Michelle had a few other questions. Michelle, did you want me to ask them or do you want to unmute and ask?
I can ask. I'll just ask one because I love to end conversations with people with this question. Three words that describe or summarize the Camino to you. Just three words.
Wow. This is one word because it's hyphenated, okay? Life-changing.
Yep.
Without a doubt. Awakening. Resetting.
Love it.
I could say inspiring and all those things, but I think they've all been said, but I think, yeah, those will be my three.
Awesome.
So awakening, resetting, and what was your first one?
Awakening, resetting. I can't remember what my first one now was. What was it?
Life-changing.
Life-changing. Thank you, Corey. Yes.
I can remember it was two words, but I couldn't remember the two words.
That's only three. There's a hyphen in there, you know?
Yeah. So awakening, resetting, and life-changing. Michelle, you have any follow-ups on that?
No, that is lovely. And you're so kind to give as much as you are back out to humanity about the Camino. You're an evangelist, as I think we all are, and we all want to be. And thank you for doing that. And you know what? We're brothers and sisters now on the Camino, right? We are all family. And so I really, really, truly seek and love the beauty of humanity. And you are just exuding that, like, beyond anything I've seen. So thank you for your
thank you. Oh, and, no, it's my, you know, I'm the lucky one that I get to talk to pilgrims every week. So thank you.
And I just want to open it up to everyone. If anyone has another follow-up question or anything they want to say to Brad before we wrap up, everyone can unmute.
Well, Brad, we had the great privilege of having one of our daughters join us for the last part for about 10 days on the Frances, and then another daughter join us to walk from Astorga in. And so the whole idea of sharing that experience with special people, now they understand more about why the Camino is so important to us, that they've had that chance to walk into the square with
us. It must have been a lovely bonding experience.
Oh, very amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing.
And how did that compare to walking in on your own? Or together without them, should I say?
I think just the whole idea of sharing that experience with someone else. Like you said, you know, you're being an evangelist for the journey. And it's always fabulous.
And every time's different, but every time has its own magic and its own specialness, I guess, too.
I couldn't agree more. And do you know what? The times I've gone back to the Camino, I thought to myself, is this time to wrap this period of my life up now? Is it, you know, time to move on and think about and get a new obsession or a new passion or a new hobby? But it actually strengthens and reinforces every time you go back.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, Dad, any other questions or anything you want to say to Brad before we begin to wrap up?
Brad, I just want to thank you for spending the last hour with us. Your energy certainly is infectious, and I hope you heal. And who knows, sounds like a lot of people plan on hitting the Camino in 2021, so maybe our paths will cross at some point.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice. And we, you know, everyone's egging to get back there, and just now is not a good time. You know, we are going back to the UK in 2 weeks today, and it looks like they've just announced that my wife and I, are going to have to go into quarantine in our own country because of the coronavirus surge again here. And the little island we live on, there's hardly any coronavirus, but we're going to have to cancel another honeymoon, possibly, because we were due to go to Iceland instead, but we're going to have to be in quarantine instead. So, but listen, let's look on the bright side. We're still here, we're still healthy, and we've still got Camino dreams alive. And it's the sights of Santiago, whether near future or midterm future or long-term future, that can keep us trudging on our way there.
Well, I keep saying that the gift, Brad, during all this has been these opportunities that we've been getting to connect. And had it not been for the quarantine, this would have never happened. We would have never had a chance to meet you in person. And this has been such a gift, I know, to me. And I'm feeling that energy from everybody that's on the call. And I so appreciate you taking time out right now to do this with us, because I know you're terribly busy. And I just wish you and your wife such good health and safe travels back to the UK. And I can't wait to hear more about your own personal adventures in your next book. And I'm always excited to see who your next interview is going to be and what little gems they're going to offer us to inspire us on our next Camino, because that's coming. We just have to wait for everything to get better, but we will all be back there. And I pray it would be great for us all to be there at the same time, wouldn't it? Our next interview actually is going to be with Michelle, so we've got to get that scheduled. So as you can tell, Michelle has some great things to say. So I hope all of you will join us again on the Camino Cafe when Michelle gets to share her story and journey. And thank you again, Brad. Let's all say farewell to Brad. And thank you everyone for being here and being a part of the call. If you ever doubt it, please don't. Your energy that you bring to these calls makes a difference, your questions, and can't thank you enough for being a part of our community. And Brad, thank you so much. So everybody have a chance.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
everybody.
Everyone. We'll see you soon.
Stay safe.
Stay safe, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye.
See you. And
thanks for having me.
Thank you. We'll post the video on our website as well, or on our website, but also on our Facebook group, and also on a few other pilgrim groups as well. And we've also interviewed Susan and Kurt, and their video will be going on the Camino Cafe page very soon. It's on the Camino Cafe, but we got to get it on the Camino Cafe so it'll be more public. So anyway, thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
See you. Thanks a lot.
See ya.
Yeah.